But today, we're calling this sermon Limping Through the Valley. And I was looking at this picture Pastor Nick put together for me, and I'm thinking, that valley actually looks kind of inviting, doesn't it? In a way. And in the Bible, there's a lot of imagery about mountaintop experiences and valleys. And I was just thinking about how there's times in your life where you anticipate something, and that it's not necessarily always what you imagined, or else there's disappointments that come. How many in here are parents? How many of you remember those late nights? So how many are still in those? Oh, I remember times where, you know, you would hear the baby crying, and then Nicole was always so good. She'd be the one, I got this, you know, you've got to, you know, you're going to be at work in the morning. You need to be awake and fresh. But then there's other times, you know, when they walk in and they're like, Mommy, Daddy, I think I'm going to throw up. And you're like, why are you in my bed? There's a bathroom right there. And then you're running them over there and you're catching it in your hands, you know, right? And then there's times where, as they get older, and you want for them more than could be possibly imagined. Remember when my son was starting to play basketball, and I remember when he would shoot a shot over me and drill it. There's no greater joy for me. I want that. I want him to be better. I want all of those things. And some of us as parents, sometimes you don't make the decisions you want, or you know are best for them. Sometimes it might involve, you know, marriage or dating or job choices or big life choices. And something that was started out so good and was so full of promise starts to feel really scary and dangerous. And you start to cry out to God, and you're God like, what is going on here? What has happened? I thought we did things different. Maybe it's your marriage even. And it starts off, I mean, nobody comes to the marriage day and they're in the ceremony. And I have had funny things happen in the ceremony, though. But, like, for instance, I can't even count how many weddings I've done. Have anybody been to the Red Bridge over where they put the locks on it, kind of like they did in Paris? It's really romantic and whatever. And I was doing a wedding this last summer for a couple. And oh, my goodness, it was hot out there. It was 100 and something. I don't even know what it was, 100 and something. And that's why we were there, because of the lock. And we worked it out in the ceremony where, you know, you get to that part where they were gonna put the lock on and he was going to throw the key over and, you know, symbolizing their eternal connection. So we're in that part of the wedding and I'm getting ready for it. And I notice that the bride, she's whispering something to me. And I'm kind of talking and trying to listen and read lips. And she's like, we forgot the lock. I'm like, what? She goes, we forgot the lock. Okay, we'll just skip that part. That's why we're here, out in 100-degree weather, but it's okay. I mean, stuff like that happens. But worse, I mean, there's times where the marriage starts to fall apart and things aren't happening and there's no communication and there's anger and you're wondering, God, what happened? And what should have been a great source of joy through your whole life starts to be the worst experience and you feel alone and you feel desperate. What about your job? I mean, there's times where you start a job and everything looks wonderful and it is wonderful and then things go wrong, or other people get promotions, or the boss doesn't treat you the same, or the money's not right, or you wonder if you're even in the right career, and coworkers, and there's a lot of things like that in life, where you're praying for something, and you have these expectations, and when they don't happen the way you thought, you start to cry out to God, and you think, God, what is going on here? And you start to develop kind of some questions, and you feel disappointed with him. And instead of that green, lush valley, the valley looks more like this. And it seems like a dark place that you can't get out of. And wherever the mountaintop was, it seems so far away that you can't even remember what it was like to be there. Not only that, you feel so exhausted and down in that valley, you think, I can't even get up. You're dying inside. Has anybody ever been mad at God? You don't have to raise your hand, but because I know for some of us, we have been, and you right away, your soul recoils and says, no, you can't be mad at him. That's wrong. But if you are, you're in good company, because a lot of the Psalms express frustration with God. Things like, why are you taking so long, God? I know you're there, and I know you're my help, but I can't wait any longer. Some of the Psalms read like this, why did the wicked prosper? I seem to do everything right, and They're clearly doing everything wrong and they're prospering and I'm not. Why do you think that was in the Bible? Because that's real. It's real human experience. Don't forget that David was, God called him a man after his own heart. But there's times when you're in that position in life and all the questions are roiling around in your mind and you can't sleep and your tummy's in knots and you're thinking, God, why? What is happening here? Then you come across some scriptures and it's almost like they're painful to read. I mean, scriptures like this in 1 Thessalonians, be thankful in all circumstances, for this is God's will for you who belong to Christ Jesus. And there's times where I read that verse and I think, this can't be written right. And I don't know if you've done this, but I love computers today. I mean, it used to be you have to go book to book to book to book, but now you can just go to your computer and read every version. Is this really how it's supposed to be written? I mean, did somebody read it just a little wrong or translate it wrong? Or how about this one? Don't be drunk with wine because that will ruin your life. This is the New Living Translation. I love how plain it is. Instead, be filled with the Holy Spirit, singing psalms and hymns and spiritual songs among yourselves and making music to the Lord in your hearts. And give thanks for everything to God the Father in the name of our Lord Jesus Christ. I don't know about you, but giving thanks for everything? You know what I want to read this as? I want it to read as, well, I can't even think of a good way to read it sometimes. Because there is no song in my heart. And I'm struggling with where you're at. And it's easy to do that in the good times. But the bad times, the unfair times, the times when things are hard and difficult and nobody understands, the times when life just doesn't seem fair and it's not adding up and it shouldn't be this way and everybody tells you it shouldn't be this way and you're like, oh, yeah, I know, it's me, I'm living it and it hurts. Experience happened in my life about 16 years ago. As a youth pastor back then, you know, there's a lot of young families in the church, and we had these two kids who were in the middle school ministry, and a horrible thing had happened. Their father had been murdered. He was working up in Big Bear, the mountains of L.A., and he had seen this girl being abused in a restaurant, literally in the restaurant, stood up to this guy. This guy invited him outside and beat him to death. It's horrible. I mean, tragic. I can't. How do you minister to somebody in this? And I was on my way over to their house, and the pastor had called me and said, hey, you have a Harley. This guy had a Harley. See if you can help with that, because the wife called about that. So, you know, I'd sat down with the family. It was right after Christmas. And you can imagine the scene. I'm sitting there on the couch. Dad's urn is on the mantle. Christmas tree's still up. And I'm just trying to minister to these kids. And I mentioned at one point to the mom, I said, Pastor mentioned you have a motorcycle and you have questions about it. She said, well, yeah, it's in the garage. It's right in the middle. I don't even know if it runs. Can you do something about it? So I said, sure. So we all walk out there, he was a smaller man. Ray was about this tall, probably, and he had taken a Sportster and lowered it. If you know bikes, I mean, it's already little, and he lowered it. And so we're standing there. It started just fine, and he was rebuilding it and had it. I mean, it was all there, and moved it off to the side. And she said, could you just ride it around the block one time in Ray's memory? I'm like, sure, no problem. What do you say? You know, I mean, I'm in shorts. It's California. You know, I've got a short sleeve shirt on, and I didn't have any gloves, and I did put his helmet on. He had one of those little peanut helmets, but you can imagine my big melon and his little peanut. I mean, it was like right here. Anyway, I got on the bike, and I was riding around the block, and as I came into an intersection, and this part of where we lived in the L.A. area, there's is two lanes going each direction. Speed limit was about 35 miles an hour. As I was coming up to this intersection, I was in the right lane. There's a station wagon ahead of me in the left. And it's one of those experiences in life where everything slows down. You can see it happening, but there's nothing you can do. Almost like when your kid is running and you can see him tripping, and you're like, stop, and you can't. So I watch, and this girl tries to beat him through the light. So we were going 35. I don't know how fast she was going, but when she hit him, I do remember just seeing the metal and the steam and it all coming at me. And on this little bike, you know, I was trying to stop, trying to turn. It wouldn't do anything. So when they hit me, they hit me like this, and I flew straight over both of them. And again, I'm in shorts, no gloves, and here is what I'm thinking. As I'm flying through the intersection, I'm thinking, I'm going to have to roll. You know, it's weird how this does, right? Like, I got to roll. I can't put my hands down because that'll just, you know, be really painful. So I remember rolling, and then I remember thinking, man, I'm rolling a long way. And then I remember thinking, this ground is really rough. And so then I rolled to a stop kind of like this. I rolled to a stop like this, and I remember looking down, and my, kind of like my heel right now, my shoe is hanging off, my tennis shoe, and I remember picking up my leg, and it was just kind of hanging there, and what it had done is it had tore my foot off in about 3 inches of bone, and I couldn't quite reach it. I was looking at it, picking it up, but I couldn't reach it. What I didn't know is my hip was dislocated and shattered, but I couldn't figure that out. You know, I'm just saying, like, what's wrong with my foot? Oh, my goodness, that's weird. And we were supposed to travel to Missouri because this is Y2K Christmas. You guys remember that? And our big plan was, you know, if all the lights go out in L.A., we want to be in Missouri because it's safer there, right? And so we were supposed to fly to L.A. that next day, and Nicole and I were going to ride the bike and look at Christmas lights that night. And so I remember sitting there thinking, I'm sure I could get this fixed before we get on the plane, you know? And so I'm sitting there on the ground, and the traffic all crowds around, you know, and I couldn't get the bleeding to stop, and I'm grabbing as far down as I could on my calf, and people are there, and I'm like, hey, someone call the police. Anybody calling anybody? And this is really surreal, I know. And I just felt this incredible sense of peace. I know that sounds weird, and I've had doctors tell me, that was shock. I'm like, okay, you call it whatever you want, but I'm asking for a phone because everything in my pockets, because of the force of the accident, was knocked out. Lost my favorite pocket knife. I mean, everything was gone. And this car, I'd rolled all the way across the intersection up into a driveway of a gas station, and this guy in an SUV was trying to pull out. So he was actually like right there as I'm looking up, and I'm like, hey, can I borrow your phone? So he gets out, hands me the phone, so I started making phone calls. You know, and I called 911, called the church, because we lived across the street from we rented a house from the church across the street, and I didn't want a cop going to the door, so I called to ask the pastor to go to the door and tell Nicole, you know, I was in a motorcycle accident. And so, anyway, it was a weird time, obviously, and I was in the hospital for nearly 2 months. You know, they had to fix my hip, and there's a lot of stories I can tell you about how God was so present in every moment. People coming around, had to get, you know, transfused, lost a lot of blood on the road there. I was on crutches for about 3 months with no leg, no foot, because they'd given me an infection. It was a long story. It's all that. I mean, that's not what I really want to talk about so much, but it is funny, though. I mean, life with no foot, you probably don't think about this much, but, you know, 3 months on crutches, you have some really funny experiences. Some of them are very humbling. I remember, you know, there's times where kids are the best. Like, kids, you know, they see that and they just stare. So I realized I'm the one that your mom always said not to stare at. That was me pretty much for a long time. During the hospital stay, there were times where it was pretty disgusting. You know, I made a couple kids faint. My youth group kids had come in and look at you and just faint. Made a kid throw up. It's funny when you're the object of all that. You know, you don't expect to be like that. And then the helplessness of all that. I used to say, yeah, my wife had to wait on me hand and foot. Get it foot there. Yeah. Because it was really debilitating. I mean, with the hip especially, it was so sore. Even coming home from the hospital, I couldn't actually put weight on the seat. Because you don't think about seats being curved. And that curve, I couldn't take it. I mean, I had to hold myself up the whole way. And then friend made a board for me to sit on. Because I couldn't drive. I mean, I couldn't ride for a long time like that. When I came home, I couldn't even sleep. I couldn't lay down flat, so we had to get a recliner for me to sleep. And I couldn't even get my own glass of water because I couldn't physically do it. You know, I couldn't get across the room because of the pain and the crutches and whatever. Do save a lot on socks, though. My wife doesn't. Don't have to fold socks anymore. They're just the big, because I only usually wear one. Because this one doesn't get stinky anymore. It's not a big deal, you know, but I get really good parking places, and it's awkward sometimes, though, because sometimes, you know, like in the winter especially, you know, I'll get out and somebody will look at me like, how are you handicapped? You know, and you're tempted just to say, well, not all handicaps are obvious. Some of them are mental, but that doesn't go over as well, you know. And I remember little kids, like I said, are awesome. One time we were sitting in an airport, and I had put my leg up because it was just hurting, and, you know, so the pant leg's hanging down, so my foot. So they actually took my leg off right about there. So my pant leg's hanging down, and this little boy walks up, and he's like, where's your leg? Like that. I said, well, my leg's right here. You know, I'm just kind of messing with him because it's my foot, really. I'm missing, not the leg. And so he just lifts up the pant leg and he looks in there and he goes, it's not in there. Like, I go, yeah, you're right. It's not in there, you know. Some of it's really humbling, you know, when I know it's hard to understand, but times when, you know, a man opens the door for you or a woman because you look helpless and you need their help. It's times, too, where, you know, you don't want to be the object of what people are staring at. Although now I know what it's like to be a pretty girl. Get it? I'm just saying, that's stupid. I'm just joking. But there's times where I know we'll be out in public, even today, and, you know, people will look. And here's the best thing about it, though. It's become the most incredible witnessing tool you can ever imagine. Because just one look and people realize, wow, you've been through something. What was that? And they always want to know. Everybody wants to know. They always want to ask, but then they feel awkward asking, you know. And I have the most fun with it. I've done this before. You know, like, I've been at Walmart and somebody, you know, will hit you with the cart. But if they hit you on this leg, it don't hurt. It just jerks the cart. And then I'll turn around like, oh my gosh, I can't believe you just, you know. Or I'll, if somebody's talking about something, I said, oh, did you just make a cripple joke? And then they, you know, they're like, oh, I'm so sorry. And all of a sudden, I've got a door to talk to them about life and death like nowhere ever before. It's funny, though, because there's a lot of times where you look at this, give thanks for everything, and you might say, what did I have to be thankful for? What could I have possibly been thankful for during that time? Well, I'll tell you, my thankfulness started on the road that day. Because as I was sitting there, the peace I felt on the road, the peace that I knew God was going to take care of this and walk me through every moment, I couldn't be more thankful than for that. It was something that I knew it was going to be okay. And it's not to say there weren't ups and downs. I mean, there was a moment in the hospital where they found the infection where I just felt like, God, what else are we going to go through with this? I mean, this is enough. I had to be on a PICC line and an IV for a month after that. And you look at it and you think, and there was times where I literally had a dude fall into my open wound leg. He was standing there. Something had happened where the morphine wasn't getting through and it was dripping on the floor. And we kept calling and saying, hey, something's wrong. The pain medicine's not working. And they kept saying, you're fine. And kept saying, no, something's really wrong. So finally this guy comes in. He goes, oh, yeah, it's all over the floor. Whoop, boom, right into my leg. Like, oh, yes, it's awesome. Yeah. You know what I'm thankful for? I'm thankful for my life. When I tell people that, strangers, people who don't know Christ, they get that. But you got to walk them through it. And then I explain to them. I say, you know, your life may not be all that you imagine, but you're alive. You may not have all the things you want, but you're alive. I have that. Can't tell you how thankful I am for my wife. At this time this happened, we'd only been married about a year and a half. And she walked with me through a horrible ordeal. And really, I tell people this a lot that are in the hospital. Be extra considerate of the caregiver because they walked through it almost worse than me. I mean, really, I was on drugs a lot. You know what I'm saying? There's a lot of times I don't even remember, and Nicole was totally alert, and she knew it all. She walked through the whole thing, and she was feeling what I couldn't even feel. So grateful for her. Grateful for my kids. I mean, there was a time in my life where I didn't even know if I'd have a family, and I've always wanted that. I'm so grateful for my three kids. They're amazing. I cherish them. So thankful for that. I'm thankful for my own family. My parents came, and Nicole would be with me all day, and then they would stay with me all night in the hospital for months. I mean, it was a long ordeal. Thankful for my sisters, and thankful for my friends. You know, sometimes that my room would just be a parade of people, and I'm thankful for that. Thankful for the compassion that I learned walking through this. I mean, I've been in the hospital for other things, you know, surgeries or whatever, but being there for that long, I watched a lot of people come in and leave, or people come in and be ungrateful for the care they were getting, or people who were in tremendous pain and didn't have the family support and didn't know God. And I got to speak at a camp for handicapped people. Did you know they have those? And the first thing I said when I got on the stage, I'm like, Man, I had a heck of a time getting a parking place here. Like, anyway. I know. You know what, though? That was one of the most humbling experiences of my life. Because as I also told them from the stage, I felt like I was barely in their club. Because I don't feel handicapped most of the time. I mean, hardly any of the time. And these people are struggling with things that I can never, ever dream of. You know, what they work through and live with. I mean, some of them were developmental handicaps, some of them physical. I mean, even having a knee is such a blessing. I know that sounds weird if you don't know what amputees deal with, but it's amazing. I mean, the gratitude I feel and the heart that's there. There's something more, though, I want to talk about this. James says, "Dear brothers and sisters, when troubles of any kind come your way, consider it an opportunity for great joy. For you know that when your faith is tested, your endurance has a chance to grow. So let it grow. Let it grow. Let it grow. For when your endurance is fully developed, you will be perfect and complete and needing nothing." There's something about the personal growth and depth of character that happens as you grow through tragedy in your life. And everybody's different. I you know, this physical thing and what we walked through is a thing, but I'll just tell you, tough times build tough people. Whatever it is that you're working through, don't forget that there's a lot of almost cliches about this, but it's true. Diamonds are formed under pressure, and depth of character is forged from difficulty. So a lot of people you're going to meet in life, they're a mile wide and an inch deep. They talk a lot, but they haven't even experienced anything in life. I read this the other day. It kind of made me laugh. It said, the same boiling water softens a potato and hardens an egg. I don't like thinking of myself as an egg, but in this case, I don't want to be a potato. Because we're all going to deal with things. I think about this verse too. Everything else is worthless when compared with the infinite value of knowing Christ Jesus, my Lord. For his sake, I have discarded everything else, counting it as garbage, so that I could gain Christ. I want to know Christ and experience the mighty power that raised him from the dead. I want to suffer with him, sharing in his death. I've often struggled with this verse, and I thought, what in the world is Paul talking about? Does he have a death wish? That's not what he's talking about. What he's talking about is he wants to endure suffering the way Christ endured suffering. What did Christ do in suffering? He forgave those who caused the suffering, and he did it on our behalf, and he did it in the best possible way possible. I found that this experience that I've walked through has deepened relationships, not only with God, but with others in a way that it's hard to explain. I can't tell you what it means to wake up and thank God to be awake today. I know people who say, you know, there's people even in this congregation, I'll greet them, I'll say, how you doing? And they're saying, well, I woke up on top of the earth today, so. But for me, that's a reality every day. There's relationships that, because of this, I purposed in my heart that I would mend, because I realized I almost missed the opportunity. I was a little bit estranged. Sorry. From my younger sister because of some things that she had been through, and she, anyway, God did some amazing things. We live in a society, it seems like the goal of our society is happiness at all costs, personal happiness, no matter what it costs other people, as long as I'm happy. Seems like we live in a society where it's all about escape of pain or pursuit of pleasure, and there's more to life than that. There's more to relationships than that. There are people who dearly need, deeply need your relationship to be mended. You may not be thankful for what has happened, but you can be thankful in it, and you can be thankful for what God does through it. That's where the thankfulness comes. For what he does, he takes these situations and he does more than what you could ever, ever, ever imagine. God's not the cause of these things, but he will be your continual companion through these things. Comes down to what your response is to whatever difficulty there is. I mean, sometimes the response is anger, or frustration, even bitterness. And all of that's very, very normal. That's the way we're made. And I know not of all of our responses are even the same. I asked Nicole if she would share some of her experiences or responses through all of this, because as I said, she walked through it without drugs, right? Right? Oh, my bad. I'll get that.
Yeah, I was not on drugs, but I wish I could tell you all the stories about him on drugs, because they were good. It's funny, I asked, kind of wondered, why does he want me to share my part? But then I realized, because it makes him look like a great Christian, and me not so much. Because while he had the spiritual limp, or the physical limp through this, I was the one spiritually limping through this time. I responded with anger and disappointment and, in the end, basically turned my back on God. I didn't lose my faith. I do get saved in the end, I promise. But it started out with my little baby girl. She was 6 weeks old when this happened. She told me if I looked at her, she was going to go to me, so to keep me from getting too nervous. But Grace was only 6 weeks old, and she was the most unhappy baby that I think I've ever been around. She cried constantly and screamed, and she had colic, is what we figured out in the end. But I remember Dennis coming home real quick and saying, hey, I'm going to go check on these kids, and then I'm going to go to a movie with some guy in the church. And I was mad already because I was trying to calm her down, and I couldn't take care of her the way I felt like I was supposed to be. And he was leaving and going to a movie, and I was mad at him. I was mad at her. I was just mad at the situation. And I got her calmed down. I had just given her a bottle, and the siren started. And the dog began to howl, and I ran to the back door and slammed the door because it was muffling the dog, but she kept crying, and then I calmed her down, and then I literally felt a sickness in my stomach. And at the time, I thought nothing of it, and then I got the knock on the door, and it was our pastor and his wife telling me that Dennis had been in a motorcycle accident. And being the argument kind of person that I am, kind of headstrong, I started to argue with them. No, you're wrong. And because their son had been with him, and I thought, they're fine, they're not upset, so surely, you know, this is a sick prank. And then they said, no, he was in a motorcycle accident. So again, I started arguing with him. No, our motorcycle's in the garage, so there's no way that he could have been in a motorcycle accident. So they explained it to me a little bit more, and I went back, and I kind of felt in shock, and I remember picking up Grace and thinking, don't let her grow up without a dad, because I had. That was the one thing I wanted for my children more than anything, was to have a dad. And Pastor couldn't really tell me his condition at the time. So we took Grace and went with the pastor's wife, and Pastor drove me to the hospital. And I walked into the emergency room, and he's laying there, and his leg is soaked with blood and bandages. And the first thing he says to me is, I think we can still fly to Missouri tomorrow. I'm like, no, we're not going anywhere. It was actually before Christmas that this happened. Yeah, that's why I have to tell the side of the story. So we talked for a little bit, and they were like, I'm sorry, we need to get him into surgery because he's lost a lot of blood. I took him back, and then his friend Skip was there. He was a fire chief, and he walked me back into the waiting room, and there was like an amazing amount of church members there already, and I really didn't want to talk to any of them. So he took me outside, and I called my mom. And I felt guilty because I was so mad at him when he left. I felt like in some strange way I had caused it. Not that I wished it on him. I just was so mad. He had surgery, and they kind of cleaned everything up. They didn't take the leg yet, and they hadn't fixed the hip. And I took Grace home, put her in bed, and I went in the kitchen, and I literally threw a two-year-old tantrum on the floor. And I yelled at God, and I said, I love you. I believe in you. Leave me alone. I cannot believe that you would cause this or allow this to happen. And I remember just getting up and going to bed. I was done with them. And then went back to the hospital the next day, and he was in a great mood. He was happy. It drove me nuts. I'm like, why can you be so happy? He was witnessing to the nurses, the doctors, left and right. It was, oh, God saved my life. I'm like, oh, why? Why are you so happy? And it drove me crazy. I didn't show my anger towards God to anyone. I didn't let him see it. I wanted to stay strong for him. my mom took care of Grace during the day, I would come home and I would just collapse in tears to her, but I didn't let on that I was angry at God. I'd go to church when the people would ask me questions, and I would kind of fakely say, yeah, it's good, he's good, he's going to be okay. It was really hard to worship because my heart was just so hard. I remember the stories, like he said, of kids coming in and passing out, and I have a problem with falling people making me laugh. And she would hit the wall, and I remember thinking, you big baby, what is wrong with you? You know, and he, like I said, he told some great stories during that time. I can't tell them, but I helped change the bandages on his leg, and because the nurses kept grabbing the bare bone, and he would cry and scream out in pain, and so I kind of took over that, and I got in arguments with the nurses, and it was just a crazy time. And I remember going home one day, and my grandma, who's here today, she had written me this beautiful letter because her husband had been shot and paralyzed, and I grew up watching her take care of him, and she wrote me this great letter, and I thought, man, if grandma can do this, I can do this. So I did, and I took care of him and did what I needed to do and took care of Grace. And I remember thinking, I told him he couldn't skydive and do all these crazy things until I got a few kids out of him. And I thought, okay, I've got one, but I want more. So, and we moved to Minnesota after that. I'm trying to think of how many months it was. And he decided he was going to do his testimony at a school. And he pulled out these pictures of the actual leg, and I threw them back at him. And I'm like, you know I can't look at this kind of stuff. And I started getting weak, and I started kind of like, I got to go lay down. And I laid on the couch, and he left. And I had actually taken those pictures. And I laid there feeling pretty weak. And I remember God so verbally saying, do you get it now? And I'm like, what? Get what? I'm a big baby, just like the girl that passed out. And it was like, oh, my gosh. I never once came close to passing out. And Theo, poor kid, got bloody noses all the time when he was little, and he'd come to me, and I'm like on the floor. As a little girl, I couldn't. I remember singing in a program, and this kid vomited, and I barely made it off the stage in time. I'm so weak when it comes to blood and that kind of stuff. And I lay there thinking, I never faltered once. I walked into that emergency room, and he was literally soaked in blood, and it never fazed me. I changed his bandages. I administered antibiotics into his PICC line at home, and it never once did I feel weak or like I was going to faint. And I laid there and just cried and asked God to forgive me, because when I was not faithful, he was faithful. He took care of me. He gave me the grace to take care of him, the grace to take care of Grace. He gave me the strength and I had such a horrible attitude, but he still took care of me. It was like that night when I said, leave me alone, and I walked away, he just walked right with me. He didn't say, okay, I'm staying here, see you later. He walked with me, and I cannot even begin to explain to you that moment sitting there thinking, I am so sorry, because he didn't do this. He did not cause that accident. He did not cause him to lose a leg or, sorry, foot. And it just was kind of an overwhelming time for me. I remember laying there, and as soon as I began to say I'm sorry, I began to realize, as Dennis had done all along, all the great things that were coming from this. My daughter didn't lose her daddy. I got a few more kids. He was able to walk again. There were people that got to hear about God. I mean, when he was under, like he had a block, right, at one point, and his doctor was an atheist. And at one point, I guess the doctor said, could you give him a little more? Because he just kept talking about God to this doctor and all the nurses. And it was driving him crazy, like it drove me crazy. I learned that day that I wasn't going to run from him anymore. And we ended up having a few miscarriages between Theo and Lily. It would have been so easy to get mad at him. It would have been so easy to blame him. But I didn't. I ran to him, and then I realized he didn't take my babies. My babies got to go be with him. And he was going to take care of them until I could be with them again. December 17th, 1999 will forever be in my ingrained in my head of such a crazy life-changing day. But it's not like God that morning said, you know what, today I'm going to tick Nicole off and she is going to be mad at me for months and months and months, and I'm going to give Dennis this joy that's going to drive her crazy. That's not what he did. He woke up, I woke up, and he said, today I'm going to walk Nicole through this, whether she wants me to or not. I'm going to give her grace and strength and wisdom to take care of her husband. I'm going to protect Dennis and spare his life so that he can touch the lives of doctors and nurses and EMTs and countless others for years to come. I think it's really important. The thing I learned the most in this whole situation is that it's the thief that comes to steal, kill, and destroy. And God comes to give us life and give it more abundantly. And that's what he did that day. He's not the giver of pain. He's the healer. He's not the cause of the loss. He fills the empty places. He hates to see us sad, and he gives us joy. He doesn't want us to be anxious. Instead, he pours out his peace. He gives us hope in the darkness and comforts us during the storm. So I might have spiritually limped through that valley, but when those valleys come, or when your valley comes, because they will come, just as you get out of them, they seem to come again and again. I don't limp. I kind of jump on his back. That's kind of where I look at it now. I don't want to ever go through any valley without him. I don't want to turn from him. I don't want to run from him. I want to let him carry me through it. And it has been amazing, because there's been many times that anger could be really easy to go there. And I think it's okay to be angry at the situation, but I will never be angry with God again, because I look at what he did when I wasn't faithful, and I think, wow, what can you do when I am faithful?
I never did get to go to the movie either. It's very sad. I didn't even remember that part. In Isaiah 61:3, talks about beauty for ashes. That's what God does for us. He gives us beauty for ashes. Romans 8:28, I know we all know this, but it says, and we know that God causes everything to work together for the good of those who love God and are called according to his purpose for them. That is what he will do. That's his promise to us, and that's how he operates. The difference is whether or not you let him work through you and let you allow him to bring it around. Because we can interrupt that. We can mess it all up with our attitude and our response to whatever it is we're walking through. Nicole hit the nail on the head there. The thief comes to kill, steal, and destroy, but God has come to give us life. And when we get those two things confused, that's when we go down a negative road and we push him away. And on the other hand, when we embrace him in the good, then he works through it with us at all the time. I'll tell you this. When you get a leg or a foot, a leg, they give you walking classes, because I didn't walk for 5 months all told. It wasn't until May. This happened December 17th, and I didn't get a foot until May. And you walk in there, and the prosthetists sit there. They go through all the process of making you a leg. They tell you it's going to be very uncomfortable at first because you're still healing. And then you've got those long bars, you know. You ever seen those before? And then I remember this guy. He seemed like such a cocky little dude. And he's like, he goes, I'm going to tell you how to do this, and you're not going to listen. I'm like, whatever. And he's like, no, I'm going to tell you how to walk, and you won't be able to do it. I'm starting to feel a little competitive, like, you don't have to be a jerk about it or whatever. And he's like, no, you won't be able to walk. He goes, but I'm going to tell you what to do. He goes, you're going to stand up. You need to lock out your knee, start, plant the heel, and then glide over. And then in the knee, then you can break it and then go to the next step. Man, that guy was right. Because you forget how to walk. I know that sounds stupid, but you do. And I think with God, there's times where we forget how to walk with him. And because we pushed him away, we've been angry or whatever it is, we've been disappointed. And sometimes it's other people's decisions that affect us. Sometimes it's our own. But regardless, we forget how to walk with him. I don't trust people who don't have a limp. I just don't. I mean, I love them. I extend grace to them. But if they've never been through things, I don't know if they really know what living is. Because life hasn't really, they haven't lived life yet. Because the fact is, every one of us have a limp somewhere, somehow, something that we have gone through. Jesus said he causes his sun to rise on the just, or the evil and the good, and sends rain on the righteous and the unrighteous. And that's true for everybody. People would say, how could this have happened to you? You're a pastor and you were doing God's work. And I say, why wouldn't it have happened to me? You think I live a charmed life because I'm a pastor? No, life happens to everybody and you've got to walk through it. Don't buy that lie that only bad things happen to bad people and good people are immune. But I do want you to believe this with all your heart. Whatever it is, God loves you all the time. I know we're used to saying God loves us, but I wanted to add all the time. All the time. All the time. All the time. I had a college professor, he sent me a note when I was in the hospital, and he quoted, there's a theologian named Soren Kierkegaard, and evidently Kierkegaard had written a note to a friend of his going through a terrible time. And let me preface it like this. If I were to ask you, what is the greatest demonstration of God's love for us, what would you say? Jesus, right? And Jesus' greatest demonstration of love would be what? Him dying on the cross, right? But here's the thing. We start to think that he loved us more that day than he loves us when we're walking through pain. Because we start to think if he loved us that much, we wouldn't be walking through pain. But the fact is, he loves us the same amount every day. He's God. He can do that. And that's basically what Soren Kierkegaard wrote to his friend. He said, God loves us as much on the day that he died for us every day of your entire life. For me, that was an eye-opening moment to think, he loves me that much every minute. And the difference of whether I feel it or not is up to me. Whether or not I let circumstances define God's love toward me or what I think is his love toward me or not. Because the fact is, he loves us that much every moment. Every moment. Every moment. Every moment. All the time. I know we all know the 23rd Psalm. If I were to quote it to you today, and just kind of in your mind, follow along with me. It says, the Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. Makes me to lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside still waters. He restores my soul. He guides me in the paths of righteousness for his name's sake. Prepares a table before me in the presence of my enemies, and he anoints my head with oil. My cup overflows. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I'll dwell in the house of the Lord forever. A lot of us have found comfort in that psalm at different times because it talks to us about how God cares for us and takes us to nice places, right? But what did I leave out of there? I hear it. You're kind of whispering, but in the New Living Translation, verse 4 says, even when I walk through the darkest valley, I will not be afraid, for you are close beside me. Your rod and staff protect and comfort me. Some people have the idea that God's will for all of us is that he would just keep us from every valley. We just hop from mountaintop to mountaintop. But that's not the life we live. That's not the world we live in, and that's not reality. The fact is, though, he does walk us through every bit of that. Can I have the worship team join me? I don't know what you all have walked through, but what we really wanted to do today is to encourage you to limp through the valley. Whatever it is that you are working through or have worked through, I wonder, though, sometimes, what would it be like if we were thankful even in the midst of tragedy? How would that change our response to it and our response to other people? How would it change your marriage, your work, your relationships, our world even? I read a quote the other day, silent gratitude isn't much good to anyone. I want to encourage you to be grateful and thankful and tell somebody today. It might be your husband or wife. It might be your kids. It might be someone you know even just mildly. But be thankful out loud. Maybe you're here today and you've pushed God away. I hope you didn't hear either of us say that's not normal, because it is. We do that. And I hope that in anything we talked about today, it doesn't minimize in your mind what you're going through, because I don't think our problems are worse than any of yours. It's funny, I've had people, they're talking to me like, oh man, I sprained my ankle, and they're going on and on about it. And it's funny because sometimes they'll look at me like, oh, I'm sorry. Like, you don't even have an ankle. I'm like, well, I know a sprained ankle still hurts. I got another ankle. It's not like my problems are worse. The difference is whether or not you let God into your problems. I found that when we push God away, it's usually because we start to doubt his character, and we start to doubt his goodness, and we start to wonder if he really loves us that much. And if that's you, it could be a lot of things. It could be something way in your past. It could be something with your parents, and they're gone. I mean, it could be whatever. But if you've pushed him away at any level, I want to encourage you today to stop pushing and to start embracing. For some of you, it may be just even a subtle thing where you're thinking, okay, I'm not ready to come to an altar and just pour out my heart to him. But you might be willing to at least look to him and say, God, I'm sorry. I know I did that, and I'm still hurting. And I promise you, as you do that, he will come to you in a way that would be the best way for you. What I'm inviting you to is in a relationship with this God who loves you all the time. Could you bow your heads for a minute and close your eyes? It's possible that you're here today and maybe you've pushed God so far away that you feel like you're completely out of relationship with him, or you don't even have a relationship with him, but you realize today that you need and want a relationship with that God. If that's you today, either one of those things, would you just raise your hand quickly? We just want to pray with you. Pray for you to start that relationship with him. Anyone at all? Let me ask the next question with your eyes still closed. Anybody here kind of pushed him away just a little bit or a lot? Anybody at all? And maybe today you're ready to say, I need to let him back in. Anybody like that at all today? I do see those hands. I appreciate your honesty. More importantly, God sees those hands and he wants to heal that. If you would all stand with me, please. Could I have some of our prayer team come down, and their spouses and board staff spouses? And if you would come down real quick, we want to give you a chance to pray. You may be here today and you're just walking through an experience and it's just tough and you want someone to stand with you. You may have been one of those that raised your hand and you just want to renew a relationship with God today. I'm going to invite you to come now. You could just step out right now and come pray with these people. You may be here today and you just need prayer for healing or a situation in your life that seems too big and you want to help pray. As our worship team leads us, I want to invite you to come and pray with these people today.